Welcome to Unpacking Peanuts, the podcast where three cartoonists take an in-depth look at the greatest comic strip of all time, Peanuts by Charles M. Schulz.
Hey everybody, welcome back to Unpacking Peanuts. We're here in 1957, looking at Charles Schulz's masterpiece, Day by Day. I'm one of your hosts for the evening. My name is Jimmy Gownley. I'm the cartoonist behind the Amelia Rule series, as well as the graphic novels, Seven Good Reasons Not to Grow Up, and The Dumbest Idea Ever. Joining me are my co-hosts. He's a playwright. He is a composer, both for the band Complicated People, as well as for this podcast. He is the creator of the original comic book Price Guide, the Argosy Guide to Comic Books, and the original Amelia Rules editor, as well as the cartoonist behind such classic strips as Strange Attractors, A Gathering of Spells, and Tangled River, Michael Cohen.
Hey there.
And he is the executive producer and writer of Mystery Science Theater 3000, as well as a former vice president of Archie Comics. And he used to work for Amelia Rules as well. And now he's the brilliant cartoonist behind the Instagram strip Sweetest Beasts, Mr. Harold Buchholz.
Hello.
So guys, it is 1957. We are here in part two, and obviously we are all loving the strips. But I wanted to ask you guys, has it affected you in any way? I mean, we are as immersed in someone's art as we possibly can, and Peanuts is a very specific work of art. I was wondering, has it affected you guys either as cartoonists or as people or as readers, just being so ensconced in this world?
I think in terms of low art and high art, how people are just so blind to the fact that low art can be as great or greater than high art.
Right.
And I see this decade, or maybe 54 through the end of the decade, as like a real high mark in creativity. Yeah. I can't think of anybody who has such a strong run creating an entire world, plus being hugely successful. I mean, not to put down Picasso or anybody like that, but to me, this is a greater achievement.
I do agree, yeah.
I think Schulz bridges low art and high art. I'd call it hello art.
Yeah, this is because there's a part of this that's hard to see because we're watching him create his characters and develop this world for himself, but he's also inventing so much of what we think of as comic strips. I love Calvin and Hobbes, but is there a part of Calvin and Hobbes that was not presaged by Peanuts? I mean, the imagination is there. The little kid that speaks like an adult is there. The small cast is there. The changing of tones. Just the element where Calvin talks like an adult. And I'm not picking on Calvin Hobbes. This is Amelia Rules and a million other things, right? There's a level of sophistication that did not happen with kids' characters before Schulz. So he has to build that element too. It's a huge achievement.
Yeah, I think there's a ton of vocabulary that most every cartoonist that's in anywhere near the vein of comedy that he's doing seems to have absorbed and then put into their work. He just enriched the whole world of cartooning because of what he did. Like, when I think of Bill Watterson, I think of the, you know, we were talking about how Schulz doesn't do the animation style. So Watterson brings this amazing line of action whenever Hobbes is attacking Calvin. It's this beautiful arc of the tail going all the way through the spine and then in the head and the arms. That's so gorgeous, something that Schulz never did. Or it's him drawing those crazy dinosaurs or whatever, that it's just so uniquely Watterson, that's what he's bringing, plus a lot of other things. But you're right. I think there are many, many, many things that Watterson took from this playbook that Schulz laid out for any cartoonist who was willing to experience it or look at it, which I think was virtually every cartoonist,
right,
from 1950 on.
Well, you know, the other thing about Watterson, we're talking about like that, like those classic strips where Hobbes is attacking Calvin. You can also see, though, he understands that it can't be labored over too. Even though these are really beautiful and more evolved drawings, let's say, than the Schulz stuff, he's also inking that stuff really, really quickly because there is just something about that. You have to have a little bit of that spontaneity in these things if you're going to bring life to it.
Yeah, for a certain kind of strip, it seems to somehow connect you in a more, I don't know what the term is, but it's a it's a more visceral level. Like I think of like the master of clean cartooning during this era is Mort Walker and Dick Brown, what they were doing with like early High and Lois and Beetle Bailey, super iconic drawings, similar to what Schultz is doing, but it's also very, very clean. And that makes every joke that they tell read, you know, it's like they get every ounce of a joke that they can. But it's not taking you to this level of deep connection with the characters the way Schultz is able to do. And I do feel like that roughness in the artwork somehow is part of making us lean into these characters. And I don't understand it. I don't know why, but when I'm doing Sweetest Beast, I'm thinking about things along those lines because I'm getting to go over this with you guys. It's such an honor to be able to delve into this master of cartooning and in a almost like a, you know, like you're taking a college course or you're having to teach the college course. You have to learn things, you have to look, you have to peer into it. And I'm constantly asking myself the question, what is Schultz doing to make this feel this way? And why is he more successful than anybody else? Those questions are constantly coming up as we're going through these, and hopefully it's coming out, you know, of our conversation here as well for others.
Yeah. One of the things that I'm taking away from it, I actually wonder if there's going to be kind of, sometimes I think when you're really hyper-focusing on something in your art, it actually weirdly takes a downward turn for a while until you can sort of subsume those new influences or those new thoughts into a more natural,
definitely
right part of your process. So I'm kind of going through that, but it's also intriguing because for the first time, I feel like I'm unlocking some stuff. Because after a while you draw comics, you know, you get into your groove, you get into your style, you get into whatever you're doing. And it's really nice to just for a while, take a moment and look at someone else's work so intently because even though it's something you've seen a million times, it gives you a new perspective on your own work. But like Carol, you were mentioning last week, or 2 weeks ago, I guess, the effect of him spending less time on the backgrounds, and when he does draw them in, they're slightly sketchier or slightly more abstract. And I really started thinking like that's giving a depth of field that I used to try to do in Amelia back in, because it was like 2001, I would do with a Photoshop filter. And that kind of looked cool in 2001, actually, but it doesn't really look that cool anymore. I wouldn't do it again. And now I'm just all interested in, well, how do I do it with just the pen? How do I do it with, you know, just on the board? And the answer is it's not as easy as you might think, or if it doesn't look easy, then you're doing it wrong.
No, I think that does tie into the idea that, you know, we're talking about these beautiful iconic poses that Schultz is making that you don't necessarily equate with rough drawing.
Right.
So he, like you said, he has to get to the point where he can draw it perfectly pristinely. And then he gets to back off a little bit and he doesn't lose any of that iconic style, but he gets this sense of it being dashed off. And again, why that is so amazing, I can't put my finger on, but it's definitely there. And it's something that I absorbed as a reader of these comics. And it definitely inspires me to continue to experiment with my own work.
How about you, Michael? You hugely influenced by the Schultz line work these days?
No, I'm just struggling to learn how to draw my stuff.
It's a struggle. It's an absolute struggle.
Let's try to make it look like me.
Well, guys, we got a lot of 1957 left to go, so how about we get right back to the strips?
Great. Alrighty.
April 9th. Charlie Brown has taken a tumble head over heels in his roller skates, landing on his head. Bonk. Lucy walks over. Charlie Brown is shaken on the ground. Whew, he says. Lucy yells at him, "You blockhead!" Charlie Brown is still lying on the ground as Lucy walks away and says, "I just can't resist," adding insult to injury.
This is one of Schultz's tricks. I mean, I never noticed this before, but this is a real source of punchlines for him. This is, again, someone taking a cliche literally. Mm-hmm. And I think if we had a challenge, you know, try to write a Peanuts comic or Peanuts daily, I think I'd go with this. I'd try to think of some cliche and have somebody react as if it was.
Yeah, no, he does. And that's like an invisible thing. I mean, you really have to be looking at this as a microscopic detail to even notice that he is doing that because it's not like he's doing it 3 days in a row. You know, he'll do that a few months ago and then it comes back to it. It is really interesting.
I'd like to point out in the third panel, when Lucy yells at Charlie Brown, this would be an example of the angerometer. Normally, anybody who would draw this strip this way would have Lucy with kind of a little anger line on her, but she doesn't. And in some ways, it makes it even more powerful because she's just saying it with force, but not with anger, which makes anger would make her seem like weaker, I guess. Yeah. But the fact that she just states it without any anger, so it doesn't hit the angerometer index at all, it's unsettling. It's powerful. And it's so Schultz.
Yeah, because it's not a visceral reaction that she has to yell at him. She just looks at it as, oh, here's an opportunity for me to yell at him. How nice.
Yeah. And I'm bored. You know, it's just a piece of little pastime. I guess.
Right, because she's in the distance in the first panel, too. So she has to, like, walk a little bit to walk up to him to make sure.
Yeah, she just comes across as so reasonable.
Right. April 12th. Charlie Brown is dressed in his baseball gear, standing next to Patty. He says, what a team. Good grief. I've got a catcher who can't see, a first baseman who's only 3 feet tall, and an outfielder who can't throw. Can't throw? Says Patty. I've never heard of such a thing. And now we see Snoopy standing in the outfield wearing a baseball hat. And Charlie Brown says, well, now you have. So Snoopy is on the baseball team.
And we haven't seen him before on the team?
No.
He's interrupted the games, but I don't,
That's true.
I'm not sure if he's...
Yeah, this one bothered me a little bit. It sort of violated some rules of the universe.
That you have applied to the universe. They're Michael's rules.
Well, no. I mean, saying a first baseman who's only 3 feet tall. I mean, they're all only 3 feet tall. And isn't Patty on the team? So she would have seen Snoopy if he was on the team.
I don't think at this point, I think the answer is he hasn't settled into Charlie Brown has a team, because we also in the previous baseball strip we looked at, Schroeder is catcher, but he's catcher for the team opposite of Linus. So at this point, I think we're still in the world of just pick up baseball. So Charlie Brown is basically saying, oh, this team I have today, good grief. Eventually it settles in. You can even, you know, like Snoopy plays shortstop, Linus plays second. Lucy's in right field. Schroeder is behind the plate. You could actually tell what positions they play. But at this stage, I think it's just, we're just supposed to assume it's pickup games.
I think last year we introduced maybe in a strip or two, the idea of Charlie Brown being manager. And he moves into that, I think, this year toward the last half of the year in a way he hadn't before.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting because it's like this is a slow motion strip just coming into focus. Over all years now, we're in 1957, and we're still just seeing some of the elements come together. And some of the things that are the most famous things of Peanuts are years away. Great Pumpkin, Flying Ace, the psychiatry booth, all that stuff. We're 7 years into it, and we haven't seen any of that yet. It's really, that's another thing that wouldn't happen today. May 2nd, Snoopy is walking down the street. He's surprised by Lucy, who comes zipping by on her roller skates really fast. Off panel, Lucy must have crashed into something because we see wham lettered, and Snoopy is actually shaken by the impact. Then as he walks away, he says, boy, there's nothing like having 4 feet.
It's all in that second panel. It's all in that expression of Lucy.
So funny.
You know she's heading for something bad. She knows it too.
And there's nothing that can be done about it.
And that third panel of Snoopy vibrating from the impact is pretty amazing drawing too.
Yeah, that's great. I remember seeing Gary Trudeau do that in an episode of Doonesbury in the 80s. It was the first time I had ever seen that technique of drawing multiple images to make it look like the figure is either vibrating or blurred or something like that. It looks great here. Looks so great. And about 30 years before Gary Trudeau did it. May 7th. Schroeder is at the piano. Snoopy is listening, sitting on top of it. Snoopy is in a state of complete bliss. He thinks to himself, beautiful. Just beautiful. Beautiful, he thinks. And then as he's in the last panel, actually on top of his head, so taken away by the music, and he says, beautiful.
Here again, we're talking about how hard it is to capture joy and happiness. And you got four amazing poses and different explorations of how Snoopy can show utter bliss listening to Schroeder play the piano. And this is something that only Schultz could have done back in this time. I don't know anybody else who would even think to go there, but it's great.
And you really have not experienced the strip if you've only heard me describe it to you right now. So really go to gocomics.com or pull out those Fantagraphics books and check that strip out, because that is all about the drawing. May 19th. It's another baseball game. Linus walks confidently up to the plate. This time he tosses his blanket to the side. He's in there. He's ready to hit. He clobbers it. Charlie Brown, as the manager, is yelling, "Run it out, Linus, run it out." Linus says, "First, I gotta have my blanket." So he stops and picks it up. Then he runs. He's off. He careens around first base. Lucy, unfortunately, is playing first base, who stomps on Linus's blanket, sending him flying, because she stops him short. He hits the ground, catches the ball, and then tags him out. In the last panel, we see Charlie Brown looking utterly defeated and Linus completely dazed as Charlie Brown says, "I can't stand it."
That's another childhood memory strip for me. I just remember this one. The amazing panel that I think makes me never forget this strip is on the bottom tier on the left, where Lucy stomps on Linus's blanket and he goes flying up in the air. And that I felt that as a kid. It just I've never ever forgotten that. Again, Lucy, she's not being angry. She doesn't have those impish grin on her face. She is just being Lucy with almost no expression, which makes it that much more chilling that she would do that. And then the question comes up, you guys are the baseball experts, was that legal for her to do? Because she's not touching Linus.
I my call is that if you bring a blanket onto the field, someone could, that's fair play. You know, you shouldn't that's have your, play. If you don't want that to happen, sure, then bring your blanket.
I also love how she boops him on the nose with this little sisterly happiness.
And looks so delighted. After she's
totally rammed him into the ground. That just resonates with what it was like, you know, the sibling relationship of love, that you still do violence to one another every once in a while.
And talking about the art and, you know, discovering things as a cartoonist, here in the bottom tier, we see that same effect of the vibrating figure to indicate Linus hitting the ground hard that we saw previously with Snoopy reacting to Lucy crashing on her skates. And I feel it's the kind of thing like Schultz tried it, either this one or the other one, and was like, "Ooh, that really works. Let me do that again. Or that's fun to draw." And it works great both instances. May 28th. Charlie Brown walks up to Lucy angrily and he says, "Look here, Lucy, I don't like all this talk about me being wishy-washy." Lucy says, "Who do you like better, your mother or your father?" Charlie Brown stops and thinks for a second. "Well, I. Then Lucy yells at the top of her lungs, "Wishy-washy!" sending Charlie Brown flying.
Well, shout out to my old friends, Tom and Barry, because we used to meet at school every day and talk about peanuts. And this joke persisted our entire lives. "Who do you like better, your mother or your father?" I mean, 60 years later, all I'd have to say is, "Who do you like better, your mother or your father?" And they know exactly what I'm talking
That's fantastic. All right. Shouts out to Tom and Barry. June 16th. Charlie Brown is blowing bubbles on a beautiful Sunday afternoon, and Snoopy is chasing them. In panel two, he actually manages to catch one in his teeth, but he unfortunately swallows it. Charlie Brown is continuing. I'm just going to break it here because this is interesting, because you can clearly see this is a Sunday strip that was divided into two. That first thing that I just read, that could be removed, because the strip basically starts again on the second tier. And Charlie Brown says, "Snoopy's the only dog in the world who can retrieve a soap bubble." And we see Snoopy do just that, but he swallows it again. And then we see 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 fantastic panels of Snoopy reacting to the fact that he just swallowed a soap bubble. And then it ends with Snoopy draped against Charlie Brown, obviously nauseated by what happened. Charlie Brown says, "Of course, it's not one of those things you can do all day long.
So much great drawing here.
Another one that's all about the drawing.
Yeah.
This looks like it was trying to be an animated cartoon.
It definitely has that.
I love some of these drawings. Again, this is, again, a total childhood memory. These drawings, the memory of these are just etched in my mind. And there's so many funny drawings. I think, and once again, we've got the fraying of the character, like you have with the vibration with Lucy and Linus and those two previous ones. You kind of get the same thing where he's playing with the vibration look of Snoopy when he's just shuddering based on the nastiness of the soap bubble. Schultz is just playing so much with this malleability of his characters, and he's having so much fun with it. And there's one with Snoopy, the third to last panel, that is just hilariously drawn. I can't even explain what it is. He's so off model and so funny with the gigantic tongue sticking out of a very wishy-washy kind of mouth. It's great. I mean, this is an unforgettable strip for me.
This does not look 50s to me. Although the wildness of the cartooning, this feels like late 60s, early 70s. And I'm not even saying Peanuts. I think it looks like a later comic strip.
Yeah, like greeting card art or something.
Yeah, right. Era. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. It's presaging that. But he did talk about how he would, you know, he would draw in those roughs we were talking about, and you'd see him in a little sketch pad, and he would just, a lot of his humor, he said in later years anyway, would come from drawing just silly little drawings of Snoopy sitting in Woodstock's nest. Mm-hmm. And then he'd work backward into a joke. And here you kind of get that feeling that he's in some ways having a tremendous amount of fun just seeing what he can do with Snoopy as a drawn object. And he's just coming up with amazingly funny drawings.
I think that is something I try to remember as often as I can when I'm working on comics, is to try to start with a visual. It's sometimes, especially when you're working with a publisher, it's sometimes necessary to provide a script, which in a lot of ways kills it for me. I try to start with some drawings, even if those drawings are never going to be seen by anyone but me, just because the two things have to go together.
Yeah. I was just thinking, there was a strip I did, again, this stuff just must be in the back of my mind, and I'm pulling from it whenever I'm doing Sweetest Beasts on Instagram. There was a strip I did where it's a lion, a lamb, and I've introduced for no particular good reason a Boston Terrier into this little trio of characters who are hanging out together. And there's one strip I did where a wild lion is saying, this is my impression of a hyena. and then it's just me drawing a bunch of silly drawings of the lion getting more and more silly and laughing and laughing and laughing and going off model and just having fun with it, very much like this strip that Schultz did. And then the last panel is Maisie just kind of deadpan says, this is my impression of being bored silly.
Very cute. You know, and that's a hard thing to achieve. You have to work really hard to make something look effortless sometimes and make something look fun. June 20th. Lucy is bending over and examining the ground. Charlie Brown is standing there looking at what she's doing. Lucy says, I planted some flower seeds here, but nothing happened. Charlie Brown says, maybe the birds ate them all, Lucy. They do that sometimes, you know. Lucy looks up to the sky. Then she stands up and screams, is that true? If I was a bird, I would fly away.
This is just so Lucy. This is so, again, Charles Schultz taking a character to a place we've never seen before. She's her own force of nature.
Absolutely. I like to think it's a bunch of Woodstocks and his friends out there.
Oh.
June 29th. Charlie Brown is standing on the sidewalk and Schroeder walks up. He has a new badge on his t-shirt and he looks quite proud of it. Charlie Brown looks closely at it. It reads, I like Ludwig. Schroeder walks away smiling. Charlie Brown says, I might have known. So is this a time machine or an obscurities explained?
Peanuts Obscurities Explain.
I think this is an Obscurities Explain. There are not a lot of Obscurities this year, but this one I thought might be worth sharing with some of our younger listeners.
All right, go for it.
So 1952, Eisenhower is running for president. I think it's against Adlai Stevenson. And for the very first time, there is a non-Republican funded ad campaign. So it's the first political action committee, I guess. And they go to Roy Disney, Walt's brother, to get some animation done for an I Like Ike 1 minute commercial. And it's the catchiest tune. I like Ike, you like Ike, everybody likes Ike. And it's basically just a bunch of characters bouncing along, including, I think there's an elephant. And it's just an amazingly well done, and I'm guessing very effective ad. And it comes out in 1952. He wins by a pretty large margin. And then in 1956, well, I also should mention that Walt Kelly does his own version of that, where he does I Go Pogo.
That's right.
Based on his character. And so it's kind of a fair game thing where all of a sudden during election season, you can make little jokes like that. And so Schultz in the second election, where it's, I think the less successful slogan, I still like Ike. but the buttons were also a huge piece of it. A lot of people had this really beautifully designy I Like Ike button that was red, white, and blue, and very it was just, again, just graphically so simple. And that was a thing that was a big deal.
Campaign buttons were huge. My dad had a collection of campaign buttons, which are missing, unfortunately, now. I remember he had the an I Like Ike, and he was a Democrat. He would never have voted for Eisenhower, even.
But he got the button.
But he got the button. And yet, you know what I like about it? It's I Like Ike. It's not, all right. It's
yeah, right. I'm not saying I want to be president.
He's
I'm just saying.
I like Ike. He seems like Ike. Side note, to the people who do the traffic in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, the traffic reports, the Eisenhower interchange will never be called the Ike. So please stop trying to make us call it the Ike.
The Ike.
Yeah,
wow.
Nobody. 26 years they've been trying this. Nobody calls it. It's the Eisenhower. I'm sorry.
I lived in Virginia Beach, Virginia, for I don't know how many years. And the guy doing the weather, or not the traffic forecast or whatever, not a forecast. It's like, this is bad right now. He would always talk about the Twin Bridges. And it only occurred to me about 15 years in that I had no idea what the Twin Bridges were or where they were. And finally, it's like, oh, because nobody called it the Twin Bridges. I had to put it together. It's like, wait a second, two bridges side by side that are not connected.
Well, I think now if you're like an 18-year-old kid driving around looking for the Ike, you'd be like, what? There's no even content, unless you're listening to Unpacking Peanuts and now you get the reference. So
my story is, we had a mock election in 1956. Uh-huh. I guess I was in like the third grade. And yeah, everyone in my family's a Democrat. I knew nothing, of course, about politics. So I went into the little booth and voted for Stevenson. And then the teacher came out and gave the results of the election. It was like 29 Eisenhower, 1 Stevenson.
And suddenly you understood a little bit more about politics.
July 3rd, Snoopy is walking in the rain and it is pouring. Panel 2, Charlie Brown and Lucy run by in their bathing suits, singing, "It's pouring, it's pouring, the old man is snoring." As they pass, Snoopy walks away thinking, "Idiots."
I don't know why I love this one so much.
I love this one too. It's so fun. It's just so funny. And you know what? They are idiots because it's raining. It's pouring. It's not.
Have you ever seen kids in bathing suits running out in the rain?
No.
I mean, I grew up in LA and there was no rain. So.
Well, it rains plenty in Pennsylvania. No, I don't ever remember that. So funny. Sometimes, you know what? Sometimes a comic strip's just funny.
Weird. How unusual.
You wouldn't know that from reading most comic strips. July 7th. Lucy is coloring in a coloring book. Crayons are strewn everywhere. Linus is looking on. He reaches to pick one up. Lucy turns and screams, "Get away from those crayons!" Linus yells off-panel, "Mom!" Lucy is frustrated by this. "Oh, good grief," she says. From off-panel, we hear Linus and Lucy's mother say, "Lucy, you share those crayons with your brother." Lucy stands up, looking very threatening at Linus, and says, "Boy, I ought to slug you a good one." Linus, calmly and with a huge smile on his face, says, "Just give me the crayons. Here's three of them. Now get out of here." Linus walks away, smiling contentedly. Lucy yells off-panel, "I gave him three, Mom. Was that enough?" The mom says, "That was fine, Lucy. It's always nice to share your things." In the last panel, Linus sits alone, looking at his crayons, white, gray, and black. He sighs.
Sigga. Well, he can try black and white comic strip.
Yeah.
The problem is this is a Sunday strip. It needs to be
colored. It needs to be colored. Yeah,
yeah, but it looks amazing in black and white. A great design on every panel. And also funny. white, black, and gray. Really, really cute. Great lettering. Again, I love it. The rare times, and it's getting rarer and rarer, where he goes for like a serif font. But that panel with Linus just yelling, "Mom," that looks awesome.
Did he discontinue having the adult voices off
some
camera?
Point, yeah. Yeah, at some point they fade away, but I'm not sure when. And even at this point now, they're very few and far between, and it always does jar me a little bit. August 11th. It's evening, and Charlie Brown is rolling out a sleeping bag in his backyard for a little backyard camping late summer. He very excitedly and happily runs inside and then comes back out dressed in his pajamas and nightcap. He tucks into the sleeping bag, but then hears a howling in the distance, which scares him, and he runs inside, but then looks back out and sees that actually it was just Snoopy who has stolen his comfortable sleeping bag.
This strip is another one of those bliss strips. Charlie Brown is smiling his whole way as he's going to get to sleep outside and do a little camp outside of his house. And I don't think I've seen another strip where we see Charlie Brown smiling for seven panels in a row. And then I'm just so into it when I'm reading it. And I, again, childhood memory, I remember this strip so well that when he hears the creepy ow sound and he runs away and back into the house and looks outside the window and then just finds Snoopy with the same blissed out look on his face sleeping in that sleeping bag is just amazing. You get the double bliss of this strip from Charlie Brown transferred to Snoopy.
Were either of you guys would ever been allowed to sleep out in your yard by yourself?
I don't think I ever did it.
I never wanted to, so I couldn't tell you what the answer would
see,
have been.
I wanted to desperately. I there was something about, I loved the things in Peanuts that it seemed like I could do, but they were just a little beyond what I really could do. You know, I would never have been allowed to do that, but I would have loved to. So when I had kids, I made sure that we spent a night, you know, camping in the backyard, just I think so I could have this experience myself.
That's cool. It's funny, as a kid, it would not occur to me as that was a desirable thing to do, but as an adult, it's like, I'd like to.
Yeah,
do
right.
Well, it's funny, when we went on a cruise, a Turner Classic Movies cruise, back in 2016, and we had this veranda thing. Actually, Dave Roman and I, the cartoonist, we went together on the, because we love Turner Classic Movies, and I discovered that in this room we had, you had this pull out couch, and so you could bring out the little mattress that you would have for a sofa bed thing. And it was very thin. And I was like, I'm sleeping out on the veranda. I'd never done anything like this before. And it was absolutely heavenly.
I bet.
And I'm sure Dave was happy not to hear my story. So it worked out
great.
It's
a win-win. August 12th. Charlie Brown is peering over a neighborhood fence. In the other yard, we see Violet, Schroeder, Shermie, and Patty all playing in a children's pool, and they look like they're having a wonderful time.
Charlie Brown is dejected in the second panel. And in the third panel, he walks home. And in the fourth panel, we see him sitting alone in a bucket, sighing.
Now, does this count as a happy strip? Because the kids are happy in the first panel?
Yep.
It does?
Well, yeah, because it shows happiness.
Character showing happiness in at least one panel. One character in one panel.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be that it's an overall happy strip.
This is like one of the most depressing things I've ever seen in my life.
Well, it's that contrast,
love
right? The extremes.
That drawing of Charlie Brown sitting in a bucket. And that's something.
Yeah, why isn't that like on a bucket?
I would buy any product with that drawing on it. I would never do this because, like, okay, let's say I was smart enough and creative enough to have this idea for Amelia, right? I would then go, well, Amelia can't fit in a bucket, so, right? Yeah, that's so over. That's over. It doesn't bother him at all. He'll just draw Charlie Brown's head sticking out of the bucket. It makes no sense. It is totally hilarious. This is up there with it's a bug, it's a bug, it's a piece of fuzz for me in terms of just things I find funny. But not as funny as I find the next strip that we're going to discuss. September 10th. Charlie Brown and Lucy are hanging out at the wall. Lucy says, "That teacher of mine never listens to my suggestions. She was trying to get us to suggest how we think our class should be run." Lucy continues, "She wouldn't listen to me at all." Charlie Brown asks, "What was your suggestion?" Lucy punches her fist in the air and shouts, "Mob rule!"
Right now.
Lucy screaming mob, I would also buy a t-shirt that says that. I think everything about it's funny. I don't know why Lucy knows the term mob rule. I don't know why she's in favor of it, but she is, and I love it. And Charlie Brown, the look on his face, he actually puts his hands up to his mouth like, oh my Lord, she is unhinged. September 20th, Snoopy is sitting there and Lucy comes up and is berating him. "You're getting to be a real smart aleck. You're getting to be..." Lucy is shocked because Snoopy just kisses her right on the nose. She walks away embarrassed and Snoopy smiles. A classic moment here, folks.
This is another step forward, I think, in Schultz's. He's taking these themes and he's just perfecting them. And the cool thing here is Snoopy doesn't lick Lucy. Snoopy kisses with lips.
Yes.
With a big old smack. And the most Berkeley-breathed Lucy you're ever going to see. In the
third
panel.
Wow. Are you right about that? Those eyes. Wow.
Yeah. It's like Opus. It could be Opus.
Hey, speaking of Berkeley breathed, this is a little bit of a tangent, but I think we should at some point do a special episode where we talk about some of our other favorite strips, maybe not go into depth about them, but maybe just, you know, talk a little bit about them. But it made me remember that I want to tell you guys, I read some Skippy.
Oh, yeah.
And there are now like 3 or 4 editions at least in print, right? Reprinting the early ones. But I just found some online. I think we're going to have to splurge and buy, let's like say volume 4 or so of Skippy and do an episode about it, because you can definitely see this is the key missing influence for Schultz.
Cool.
Not visually, but conceptually for sure. October 5th. Charlie Brown is angry at Lucy and he raises his fist saying, "If you weren't a girl, I'd slug you." Then Lucy says, "Why, Charlie Brown, how you talk. How can you stand there and say you'll hit the girl who may someday be the mother of your children?" Charlie Brown is shaken by this and runs off screaming, "Dog!"
Oh man, Lucy. You know how to set fear into the heart of Charlie Brown.
Do we see this as a possibility? Do you guys think that could happen?
I think, well, Schroeder's not having anything to do with her.
Right. Well, Schroeder's not fair. Changing.
She spends a lot of time with Charlie Brown.
Yeah, that's true. That is true. I ship it, as the kids say. Actually, I don't ship it. Can you imagine poor Charlie Brown at 50 having to be married to Lucy? Wow.
They'd figure it out.
At least he's already bald, right? So yes.
I'm going to do a little prologue to the next sequence.
All right.
Because they're not all here, but this is like the most terrifying depiction of addiction and withdrawal I've ever seen. Yeah. It's just horrifying. I couldn't even bear to have them all, but there's three of them. So set it up because we don't have the setup here.
Okay. So what it is that Linus has been challenged by Lucy, right, to give up his blanket. He says he can't do it. Or she says he can't do it. And he has to give it up for a whole week. And that's what we're about to see. 2 weeks. Right. Sorry. Because at this point, what we're going to read is the second week. At this point, Linus has been without his blanket for a week. October 21st. Charlie Brown comes up to Linus, who looks like he's in a bad way. And Charlie Brown says, "Well, Linus, you've gone without your blanket for a whole week." Linus says, "I'll never last another week. I have hot and cold flashes. My eyes won't focus." He grabs Charlie Brown by the collar and shakes him, screaming, "I gotta have that blanket." He's now pounding the ground, saying, "I'm cracking up and nobody cares. Nobody, nobody, nobody." That's the strip.
Hilarious.
Yeah.
There is no joke there. That is rough. when did that movie come out? What's that one? The Lost Weekend? When did that come out?
Like 45? Maybe the Man with a Golden Arm? I don't know.
Or maybe. The next day, October 22nd, we see Charlie Brown still talking to Linus. Linus says, "Look at my handshake, Charlie Brown. I'm in a bad way. I got to get that blanket." Charlie Brown grabs him and says, "No, don't give up now. You've gone this far. Don't give up." Linus continues, "But what about my hands? Look at them shake." Charlie Brown says, "Put them in your pocket." Linus does, and we see him vibrating in the same way we've seen it drawn in a few strips previous, where Linus is just multiple versions of himself vibrating. Schultz clearly liked that technique and was going for it.
Yeah.
And then it ends here with Lucy playing with the little bear, and Charlie Brown walks in and says, "I think this has gone far enough, Lucy." Then they run off towards off-panel, and Charlie Brown says, "You'd better unlock the closet and give Linus his blanket." We see them looking off panel, but we don't see what they see. And Lucy says, "I guess maybe you're right." In the last panel, we see Linus on the ground, having clawed his fingernails into the door to try to get his blanket out of the closet.
Oh my Chilling. God.
Yeah. Kids, don't do blankets. If we could have one message from Unpacking Peanuts, it is just say no to blankets.
This definitely influenced the Beats.
It would have been to their advantage if it had. Man, the third strip in this six strip sequence, the very first panel of Linus looks like an addict. I mean, he really does look like an addict who's been using withdrawal. It's deeply disturbing.
It's funny because Schultz is like a teetotaler, and I know I can't imagine him ever having smoked or anything like that. I wonder what he is channeling to imagine what that feels like, because it feels very, very authentic. And maybe he's just a great writer and he's able to have empathy, you know, but maybe there's something else that he's thinking. Could be as simple as coffee.
Reading William Burroughs, maybe.
Actually, I would not be surprised by that. Like, I remember in that Schultz interview, him talking about, like, "Oh, yeah, the next book I want to read is Underworld by Don DeLillo." And you're like, oh, wow. He really was
widely read.
Widely read, yes. And I think, obviously, that comes through. I mean, this is a guy that has a wide range of things to reference, unlike, like, say, me, who only has the Beatles, baseball, and Peanuts itself.
Well, that's pretty widely read.
Yeah. October 28th. Charlie Brown and Lucy are walking. Lucy is looking up at the sky. Then they're at the wall. Lucy says, "I've sort of had the feeling all day that the moon is going to fall." She continues, "Do you ever have a feeling like that, Charlie Brown?" Charlie Brown says, "No, I can't say that I have." And Lucy looks at him and says, "You're a cold fish, aren't you?" I love that punchline. The reason I picked this, though, is because that's where we can see that the wall is a bridge.
Yeah, it's clearly a bridge.
Yeah. Drawn in a very strange perspective.
Yeah. And looks very pebbly. It's hard to make sense of what we're actually looking at there.
Yeah, but it's clearly two walls on either side. Yeah. It's kind of even arched. It's it's a bridge.
Yeah.
And actually, when I was thinking about this after having mentioned it in whatever episode I mentioned it, it's seen as a bridge in one of the specials, at least in the Valentine's Day one.
Okay.
Because Linus runs to it and is throwing chocolates off it. And you see the bottom of the bridge where Snoopy and Woodstock are catching the chocolates. So coming up next, then, here in November, we have another run of strips about Snoopy feeling insulted. Where Charlie Brown says his breed is just a dime a dozen, whereas other breeds go for quite a bit more. And here we see on November 7th, he's passing Schroeder. And Schroeder just says, well, how's old dime a dozen today? And even though Snoopy was previously quite happy walking along, he, in his last panel, looks completely defeated and deflated, just lying flat in his stomach on the ground, thinking to himself, miserable. So it's interesting, we have variations on a theme within variations on a theme here. Twice in this year, we're having multiple strips about Snoopy just feeling inadequate, I guess. November 17th, Charlie Brown and Lucy are facing off. Lucy is smiling, but Charlie Brown looks angry. You and your insults, Charlie Brown continues. Boy, if you weren't a girl, I ought to slug you a good one. Lucy is having none of it and puts up her fists and says, all right, Charlie Brown, come on and try it. You're always talking big. Now come on, try it. Lucy is in a full boxing position. The other girls come running. Fight, fight. Oh, good grief, says Charlie Brown. Lucy says, come on, Charlie Brown, put him up. Patty runs in yelling, fight. Now the whole gang is here. Lucy continues, come on, I'm ready for you. Put him up there. Charlie Brown just walks off completely embarrassed and humiliated. And then he sits by himself on the ground and says, a person shouldn't have to lose all his pride when he's only 6 years old. One of the things that it struck me, because we have coming up here another Lucy gonna fight thing. Schultz does not treat the girl characters like traditional girl characters in comic strips or kids fiction or probably just in pop culture in general. You know, he shows them as they're capable, they're tough. I mean, you know, if this is going to be a fight and Charlie Brown decides to go for it, you know, he's going to get his butt kicked by Lucy. I think it's a really, it's something that doesn't get a lot of attention, I think, but it's definitely something worth noting about Schultz.
Yeah. Well, I think it's really interesting because, yeah, his three main girl characters are all very unlikable. And
right.
The next three characters he's going to introduce are very likable girls. There's Sally and Peppermint Patty.
Yeah, it's weird, though, because I do like Lucy.
Frida.
I mean, Lucy is being... There's a joy to Lucy's meanness, which partly makes me feel like she's kind of putting it on until it gets too far. And there's a more nastiness to Patty and Violet. I like Lucy. that's a great title. You should use that. And then we have another fight strip, December 8th. Charlie Brown and Lucy are squaring off again. Charlie Brown says, boy, you sure talk a lot. Lucy says, yeah, well, I'm not all talk like some people I know. Good grief, Charlie Brown says. How do I get into these things? Lucy says, do you want to put him up? And she does. Come on, Charlie Brown, let's see what you're made of. Come on, put him up here. What's the matter with you? Put him up. Charlie Brown is again dejected and turns away from her embarrassed. He sits on the ground, humiliated, as Linus and Schroeder look on and Lucy walks away, a wicked grin on her face. Linus yells after her. You should have slugged her, Charlie Brown. Even if she is my sister, I say you should have slugged her. Schroeder turns to Linus and says, you don't understand, Linus. Charlie Brown did a very admirable thing. He would never think of hitting a girl, so he deliberately humiliated himself to hold on to his high moral standards. Isn't that right, Charlie Brown? Charlie Brown says, no, I was just afraid of getting beat up.
Now, if that would have been Shermie instead of Schroeder, this would have been much funnier.
All right. Is that a question? Yeah. Well, you know, that would fit in with Shermie's personality traits, though, right? Because he has empathy, as Harold said. So I think that is the year. Even though this is not a Shermie strip, I think it tips the Shermometer towards empathy. What do you think?
I think Schroeder is starting to usurp some of Shermie's personality traits.
That's actually a really good point. That's probably why Shermie eventually becomes phased out, because Schroeder can do all of that stuff. And
you can do it while he's playing piano.
Exactly.
That's talent.
November 18th, Schroeder sits listening to a little transistor radio. across the radio comes the announcement. And now the number one song hit across the nation. Schroeder listens in horror at some dissonant looking notes and then turns the radio off. As he walks away, he says, "The nation's in sad shape." And I looked up what it, the number one song the day this came out was Jailhouse Rock.
Right. Yeah, I figured it was Elvis.
So depending on how you feel about Jailhouse Rock, you could either agree or disagree with Schroeder. Hey, but Harold, you, why don't you Google, what would it have been when Schultz was creating this show?
Well, if we go back 6 weeks, that's my best guess. It looks like it is Honeycomb. No, he couldn't possibly be thinking that about Honeycomb.
So. No.
I think Honeycomb is actually based in probably classical music in some way.
Well, there is some music there if somebody can figure out what it is.
Well, is he just drawing the same note next to each other twice so that it looks like it's almost like he's drawing reverb. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Which actually is pretty innovative in and of itself. But I think we're supposed to read it as dissonance.
Yeah, jangly noise.
Yeah. And then we wrap up the year basically with a whole run of gags about Schroeder missing Beethoven's birthday. Beethoven's birthday is one of the earliest calendar markings that comes up in Peanuts, I think. You know, later on we'll have things like the Easter Beagle, of course, and the Great Pumpkin. But Beethoven's birthday is a nice little fun Schultz invention for the strip, I think. And Schroeder constantly being concerned that's being commercialized.
And there are three strips in a row that you could argue if you did not read the strips before, you wouldn't know where the humor was coming from. You've got Lucy singing loudly, "Happy birthday, dear Beethoven, happy birthday to you," and then laughing. And Schroeder is just angry as all get out. But it doesn't tell you that he missed the birthday or forgot. So it doesn't really make any sense in and of itself. And then when she's sitting at the piano and he's all depressed, she said, "You wouldn't catch me missing Pat Boone's birthday."
Again, that's a time machine.
Yeah, you'd really, really have to kind of read into these characters to get what's going on there. And then the next strip, again, it's just Schroeder standing at the doorway looking toward his piano and then walking toward the piano, which has a bust of Beethoven on it. And on the last panel, he just says, "What can I say?" I mean, no explanation whatsoever.
By drawing two commas to the side, two parentheses rather, to the side of Schroeder's eye, it indicates like despair, possibly that he was guilt, crying, or that he's about to cry. Most minimal change, and it really sells that emotion. And a good drawing of Beethoven.
Yeah, always.
December 24th. Linus and Lucy are in their PJs. Lucy excitedly comes up to Linus and says, "Tonight is the night, Linus. Tonight Santa Claus zooms around the world, dropping presents down the chimneys for all the little kids." Lucy looks completely happy and excited as Linus contemplatively holds his blanket and sucks his thumb. Then Linus says, "Let us fervently wish him safe journey." That's part of that Schultz language.
Yeah, and this year to me is about the deepening and enriching each and every character. You've got Lucy, who's just more and more self-confidently just being this force of nature. You got Charlie Brown kind of settling into this kind of loser character. And you have a Snoopy moving into this area of I don't know what you call it. We're seeing a lot more of Snoopy's bliss in this strip. He's just so independent of the kids in some ways, but he's still very tied to them, and whatever they say can hurt him. That's just getting deeper and richer. And then you've got little Linus all of a sudden becoming maybe a bit of a, what would you call it?
Complex.
He is such a complex character. He's got this, yeah. What is the word for Linus? Or there's not just one word for Linus.
He's super complex.
He's complex. And that these little kid saying, let us fervently wish him safe journey. I just find that absolutely delightful. I am falling in love with Linus here. When he started out, you know, a year or so ago, he was still the little brother and slightly different personality than what you got now. He's a little more, he's stepping back. He's contemplating things more and then coming up with amazing zingers and in his own Linus-y kind of way, which is just so
special.
I think
special. We're seeing Snoopy being kind of bipolar, manic depressive, because we go from the happy dance stuff, which there's a lot of, to the fact that someone called him Fuzzy Face, where he's like totally like destroyed for a week.
yeah. The extremes are widening, and the characters are owning those extremes in ways that you can't point to another character in comics or in literature and say, that's the template for Lucy. Right. That's the template for Linus. That's the template for Snoopy. That's the template for Charlie Brown. They don't exist. He's making his own.
Talking
world.
About the, you know, extremes, we could see that in just this one strip here on the 24th too, because let us fervently wish him safe journey is such a formal and almost archaic sounding phrase, but it's coming out of a child's mouth. But not only that, it's in reference to Santa Claus, the most childlike thing you could imagine, right? That's another great. Cartoonist would say something, say, well, it's snowing. I hope he has four-wheel drive, or, you know, I bet I'll get a bigger size, whatever it is. It wouldn't be that.
Yeah.
And there's even one more thing in this strip is, you know, Lucy is this is a nice little bonding moment with Lucy running up in her PJs and her little footsie pajamas. And she's the one, like, she's been taking on the role of the big sister, teaching Linus all these things that generally aren't true. And now she's teaching something that at least is would be generally accepted as true in the child world, right? And then she has this amazingly blissed out moment standing next to in front of the fireplace in their home. And, you know, of course the fireplace makes you think Santa Claus. And I love the last panel where the contemplative Linus says, let us fervently wish him safe journey. And there's this, I can't even describe the look on Lucy's face, but it's almost like a gratitude that he found this little homiletic statement to make that's appropriate for the occasion. You know, it's just, you read that into it. I don't know how he did that in that little drawing, but that's the sense I get, where there's this little warm moment between them that shows off their personalities and
that smile on Lucy's face, which is different than other smiles, is accomplished by changing one line 1/32nd of an inch or something like that. It's mind-blowing that it's these minimal little things that convey so much range of emotion. It's great cartooning.
And the third panel of Lucy is the purest drawing of Lucy's happiness I think we've ever seen, that wasn't, you know, didn't have some layer of... you know, you could say that there's greed behind it, what she's doing, but this looks like just a genuine moment where she has gratitude.
And the drawing it's great as cartooning, because if you unfolded Lucy's arms, they would, right? They would drag on the ground like a gorilla. But if you drew them like, you know, in quotes, accurately, if she had real anatomy in that cartoon body, they would be too tiny and they wouldn't even register. So he just knows how to distort his figures so that it doesn't even come across as a distortion. It just comes across as the pose. It's really great. Well, guys, that brings us to the end of 1957. Any last words on this year?
How could it get better?
Well, actually, I have one question. Before we do, I have one question for you, Michael. In this year, you would now be 1 year older than Charlie Brown. Right, because Charlie Brown defines himself as 6, and you were saying, yeah, well, this obviously was not for kids, but yet you were reading it when you were a very little kid. Did this feel like an authentic portrayal of your childhood? I mean, since you're a contemporary at this point.
Yeah, I mean, I identified with Linus, even though I was totally mediocre at everything, just because of the relationship with Lucy.
Mm-hmm. You both had that in common. You and Harold.
Yeah. Yep, absolutely. Linus, to me, I think I said this in the very first episode we did, that Linus was more real to me than anybody in my neighborhood. Mm-hmm. How do you do that?
Right.
How do you do that with pen and ink? I don't understand.
Nope. But maybe if we read the rest of the 17,897 strips, we will come to understand. If not, at least we will have a heck of a time doing it. So, guys, thanks for doing this with me. I appreciate every week we get to spend recording this. And for you guys out there, I appreciate you listening, and I hope you're enjoying yourself. In the meantime, between now and next week, if you want to get in touch with us, you can write us at unpackingpeanuts.com, or you could check us out on social media. We're on Twitter and Instagram at unpackpeanuts. And we would love to hear from you. And we would love for you to vote on what you think is the strip of the year from 1957 out of our choices. So that's how we're going to wrap it up. Guys, give me your choices for strip of the year 1957. Michael, why don't you start?
I mean, it's a tough one. I can't explain this one or why I love this so much, but it's 7-3. It's raining, it's pouring, the old man is snoring.
Idiots.
And but by the way, maybe we had the West Coast variant, because this is it's pouring. Where we said it's
no, raining, I, yeah, that's why I said, I've never heard it's pouring. Yes, it's raining, it's pouring. It's not, it's pouring, it's pouring. Right. That would be absurd. Yes. That's why Snoopy thinks they're idiots.
Yeah, of course. They got the lyrics wrong.
Harold, how about you?
This wasn't easy for me either. There was no one strip that seemed to embody everything. So I chose the wordless strip, which is from August 11th, with Charlie Brown happily setting up his sleeping blanket, only to be driven in abject fear into the house to discover that he was scared off by his own dog. It's just so well told. Schultz is so good at these wordless gags. And, and it's got a little bit of that Snoopy bliss that was really a major part of this year.
Those are great picks. As was what I was going to choose. I was going to choose Charlie Brown in a bucket, but just because that drawing is great. August 12th, but I'm actually going to go with September 10th, Lucy yelling that the classroom should be run by mob rule, just because that's just a funny punchline. So there you go, guys. Go on our website, unpackingpeanuts.com. Let us know what you think. This has been great. You know what? I think next year, 1958, it gets even better.
You think so?
So until then, I've been Jimmy for Michael and Harold. Be of good cheer.
Be of good cheer.
Yes, be of good cheer.
Unpacking Peanuts is copyright Jimmy Gownley, Michael Cohen, and Harold Buchholz. Produced by Liz Sumner. Music by Michael Cohen. Additional voiceover by Aziza Shakrala Clark. For more from the show, follow Unpack Peanuts on Instagram and Twitter. For more about Jimmy, Michael, and Harold, visit unpackingpeanuts.com. Have a wonderful day, and thanks for listening.
You blockhead!